Hi, everyone, and welcome in to a very special edition of Tentacles from the Deep, a Seattle Kraken podcast, which is going to be less about the Seattle Kraken today, as we have a guest, co-founder of Audiograph.io, Andrew, joins me here, or I join him as we record this on Riverside. How's it going, Andrew?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Excited to talk hockey with you. I found your service very helpful, and then coincidentally, it turned out you're a massive hockey fan, which was a pleasant coincidence, I found. So the All-Star game was last weekend, and they had the skills competition, which some events were outside, some events were on the ice. What were your general thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, in general, I'm a big fan of the All-Star game. I went a couple years ago down in Tampa. I've got a buddy that lives there. So I went to that All-Star game, and then it was in San Jose maybe 2-3 seasons ago. COVID's a blur. I don't know time anymore. But that's, you know, just down the road for me in San Francisco. So I went to that one. And yeah, I think, you know, I always look forward to the All-Star game. It was a big bummer last year not having it. But I think, I don't know if it's because there was a break or if something was different this year, but something about it this year just didn't have the same level of excitement that maybe I feel like there normally is.
Yeah, it did feel a little tame, but I think they had like a limited crowd too. Like, I don't think it was a full stadium. I think they were kind of like half capacity for the All-Star game, which made it kind of like a little quieter almost, I think, maybe.
I'm not sure. And then they did those outdoor events for the skills competition, which were cool. You know, the blackjack game, I thought that was really fun. It seems like, you know, they didn't even know the rules that they published for the game. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter afterward.
I also seen an article, I guess they actually did that the night before. Like, those ones are pre-taped.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was kind of weird because, like, I think the blackjack game, it was, like, light out. Like, you could see kind of, like, the sunset or whatever. And, like, all of a sudden, like, but before that, we seen the shooting accuracy, which is pitch dark, which is very cool, too. But it was just kind of, like, a weird setup. But it's like, oh, it got lighter out.
Yeah, and then there was no crowd, right? So it was just kind of, like, this awkward silence of the players doing the thing. And for the blackjack game, at least there was the fun kind of new twist, but for just passing, it's like, I don't know.
I think the idea was the players and Jerry D were supposed to be chirping each other more. Like, there's supposed to be more of their personalities coming out, but like a lot of the players, they're like, oh, this is like national television. I'm not going to say something stupid or start swearing.
Yeah. Or, you know, if that's the idea, then you have to pick the right players to make sure that that's going to happen. Right. Like,
yeah.
If you want this like closed, no fan thing with players chirping each other, then, you know, you can't do that event without Marchand being a part of it.
No. He was up to some shenanigans last night. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that was about, but that was interesting. He was in a mood.
Waiting to see what that suspension looks like. I saw a tweet that he's never had a suspension increased in length as a repeat offender.
Really?
He
must be a very smooth talker.
Yeah, as an Avs fan that got wrecked by that Kadri suspension in the playoffs. Not happy to hear that other people aren't getting repeat offender stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. What did you think of the Bellagio thing? Like that shooting accuracy in the fountain? I thought that was actually pretty cool. I wouldn't mind seeing something like that to happen again.
Yeah, it was a cool idea. It had that just a little bit of awkwardness to it. Right, where like it didn't feel like the players really knew kind of what was going on, and, you know, especially something like that that's really kind of time sensitive, you know, they're racing against the clock. It didn't feel like there was actually that much urgency, and so maybe there's something to be done. You know, they set up kind of two different halves. They had, you know, they could have had people shooting in both directions and maybe like a head-to-head race instead of racing the clock. There might be a way to kind of bring a little bit more intensity to it.
I think it was just a case of the players kind of being a little mic shy, so to speak, and didn't really want to like get too far into the chirping, not sure where their mind's gonna go and what they're gonna say, like just in the heat of the moment. So they're like, yeah, just not gonna chirp at all, because if I start chirping, I don't know where my mind's gonna go and where I'm gonna take this.
Yeah, for sure. Do we know what happened like for all the fans in Vegas? Were they watching that on the Jumbotron in T-Mobile Arena?
Yeah, the article said that that's what they used, so when they needed to resurface the ice, they would put that event up on the Jumbotron so the people inside the arena, the players, could watch it while they're kind of just resurfacing the ice. So while there's a break inside, they would shoot over to that. When that event was done, they'd come back and they'd be right into another event. So it seemed like it was just seamless, but really it was just they resurfaced the ice in between while they were showing the pre-tapes.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was like basically like filler content for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I guess they didn't really have... It would have been cool if they had a huge live audience the day before. Like, there would have been spoilers, yeah. And that's probably why they didn't do it.
Yeah, and I guess there was a lot of politics that went into that, because they shut down the strip for 2 hours, and apparently they interviewed the content manager for the NHL, and he's like, we had to have, like, 100 different signatures from 100 different places, and, like, cop approval, and... I guess like the players were messing around at the end of the event, at the end of the thing. They're like, guys, yeah, get out of here. We're gonna get fined if we don't if we're not out of here.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a schmozzle. It was really cool for a one time thing, but I don't think that's something they should like try and repeat every place they go.
Yeah, I it's a uniquely Vegas thing for sure. Yeah. I wouldn't expect to see it in other places.
So for the inside events, we had one. Fastest skater, and we had that one female professional player that actually like damn near won the thing, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, they do the fastest skater every year. It's fun to see someone that's not named Connor McDavid win.
That's true.
But the flip side is that, you know, you have these players that in your head you're like, okay, these are the fastest skaters, and then to have somebody else win, is a little weird. I don't know how you fix that. Maybe you do fastest skater with the puck and make him carry a puck around. Maybe you do something that isn't just skate in an oval.
Yeah, it's probably why they lead off with that event. It's like the least exciting event. It's like, okay, let's get this one out of the way. You can see a guy fly around the ice a couple times, and then we'll move on to something more exciting. And the more exciting stuff was like magic tricks in like breakaway challenge with celebrity goalies. And corrupt judging, that was very interesting too.
Yeah, I mean that was amazing. The judging was awful, but that was by far the best piece of any skills challenge that I've seen.
Oh yeah, that magic trick with Hughes and the New Jersey Devils equipment manager's son. That was just epic. I was like, whoa! And they're like so in sync with their stick toss too. I'm like, I wonder how many times they practice that.
Yeah, another uniquely Vegas thing for sure. Definitely cool to see them kind of bring some of the Vegas culture into that. But then also, you know, you bring in Trevor Zegras, who wasn't really part of the All-Star game, but they decided, you know, we want him in the skills competition. And he drops a move like that. I mean, that's amazing. The only reason I can confidently say that we'll see moves like that again is because he's going to do it next year and the year after that and the year after that.
Yeah. I also thought the Ovechkin tribute was pretty cool. Kaprizov with the little Ovechkin tribute. But I guess he's like one of those guys that he like gets a stick from everybody, and he's good with this everybody's stick. I was just listening, can't remember, with his Spin Chicklets or whether it was like the Cam and Strick podcast, but they had one of his teammates on, and they like, he goes up to everybody. He's like, hey, can I get one of your sticks? And like the next day in practice, he'll be using the stick, and he'll just be like doing really good with the stick too. And people are like, how does he do that? He just goes around. He's like, one day he's got a Crosby stick out there. Next day, it's like a Drysdale stick. He's got an Ovechkin stick. I guess the guy's just like a big stick nerd.
Yeah.
So he did that little tribute. I thought that was pretty cool. But Seegers did definitely stole the show with his blindfolded dodgeball thing.
Yeah, and then the John Hamm 19 score at the end.
Yeah, and he didn't even like... I don't think he even made a shot. Like he screwed up his thing twice and still won the competition $50,000 that went with prize money.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that the prize money probably doesn't matter. Although for Trevor Zegras, maybe it does. This early in his career, but yeah, for the fans, it's just kind of betrayal, right? Like you see something amazing, you want that to win. And instead, it's like, oh, the hometown guy wins because the judging's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah. All of a sudden, they're going to count the 19. It's like, what? You didn't count, like, do that before. Like, just, like, do it, like, whose line is it anyway? And just have, like, made up points.
Yeah.
Points were absolutely nothing.
But yeah, I mean, still a great event. The one thing that I think I missed in the skills challenge this year is one of the relays. Like normally they have some kind of relay where you're, you know, stick handling through a bunch of pucks, or, you know, one person is passing into like nets and just like a bunch of stuff. And I think something about that and that being head to head racing at the same time just seems a lot more exciting than some of these individual events.
Yeah, that was probably would have been I was just like, didn't think I missed it till you mentioned it. Like, yes, I did miss that. Absolutely. Right on. Absolutely, I missed that. Another thing I missed was Nathan MacKinnon at the All-Star game because of his injury. What do you think of the hit, and as an Avs fan, I guess, and what do you think of the hit as a hockey fan? Because those might be different answers.
Sure. I guess as an Avs fan, the main thing is you just kind of feel like, again, I think, you know, we've had star players getting hurt at key points in the season the last 2, 3, 4 years. And it just sucks. You know, I don't think that that hit was anybody's fault. You know, I think that that was an unfortunate situation. Wasn't meant to injure or hit him in the head, break his nose. And sounds like he's got like some serious like face reconstruction going on.
Yeah, I always said it was kind of like one of those Lou Lamoriello, is an unfortunate set of circumstances. It's no one's fault. You know, Lou out there. Because, like, the hit looked really bad right off the bat. And, like, they gave a major penalty, I think a match penalty, too, for hitting the head. And then they reviewed it. It's like, oh, he actually hit his stick into his chest, which ended up going up into his face and breaking his face. Like, it's like a once-in-a-million hit.
Yeah, it's they have that you can now review major penalties rule from the playoffs with Vegas and San Jose a couple years ago, right? And so they got to review the major penalty, and the rules don't let them go lower than a minor, so they made it a minor. Yeah. But like it shouldn't have been a penalty. It's an unfortunate thing. The Avs kind of spent the entire second period chasing Taylor Hall around the ice for some reason.
Yeah.
And then the third period, they're like, oh, we kind of need to score goals again. So at least they figured out how to score goals. I think they won in overtime. So at least that, you know, for losing a guy like MacKinnon, being able to come back without him and win that game was still pretty great.
This is a sign to the Avs' depth, I find, that even if they lose MacKinnon, it doesn't seem like they really lose that much. Even though they're losing a lot, when you still have to play them, it's not like, not like they're down too much or they can't handle it. Seems like Kadri all of a sudden steps up and performs even better than he was, which is already a very high level this year. And other players step up too. Cal Makar got compared to Paul Coffey on a hockey broadcast. And the interesting part was it was Wayne Gretzky who compared him to Paul Coffey. What are your thoughts on the great one comparing your Avs defenseman to Paul Coffey?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not old enough to actually have, you know, experience watching Paul Coffey play and be like, wow, Cale Makar looks like that, whatever. But I think, you know, for Gretzky to compare you as a player to anybody of like any large category of good players is awesome. And especially this early in your career, you know, I think that the name that was bounced around for Cale Makar a lot, kind of in the earliest parts of his NHL career, was Erik Karlsson. And, you know, I think at this point it's pretty clear that like Cale Makar is going to be way better than Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson had a couple great years, but like he's kind of fallen off the rails. You know, he came out to San Jose, giant contract. He's had some injury problems, which is unfortunate, but also he's more or less in a guy you don't really think about anymore.
But is that just because he's playing in San Jose and San Jose probably doesn't have like the most nationwide audience, just in the general sense that they probably don't have 5 million fans across the United States and Canada? It's probably like 100,000 in the San Jose area and maybe a few scattered throughout.
That might be a piece of it. I mean, to add,
it's just they don't eat up that media coverage. So it's like ESPN isn't leading off with a San Jose Sharks game. They're probably going to lead off with the New York Rangers, the Colorado Avalanche, you know, those upper echelon teams with the big names.
I think that might be a piece, but, you know, I do live in San Francisco. So, you know, the Sharks are my local team.
Oh, yeah.
And I would expect to kind of get a decent amount of coverage from that. You know, you can look at the Sharks and how poorly they're doing as a team. And you could say, oh, well, he's not getting the media coverage because the team's bad, or the team's not getting national games because they're bad. But also the flip side of that is, you know, he should be making this team better. You know, the Sharks are in an unfortunate situation where they just, you know, gave so much money to two defensemen. They didn't have money for anybody else.
Watching him in Ottawa, he wasn't exactly a defensive guru to begin with. Like, he ran the power play and he was their leading scorer, which didn't necessarily mean the team was winning in Ottawa either. Like, he's not like a Scott Niedermayer or a Chris Pronger. He's one of those defensemen that's going to get you a lot of points, but for the most part, his defensive game's not that great. I don't know. I don't have a different defenseman. Maybe Ray Bourque earlier on in his career, who didn't really care about the defensive side of the game. He was just looking to get his points in.
Yeah, or I mean, this is maybe even more of a stretch, but like a Tyson Barrie that's just a forward that plays defense.
Yeah, or that. Surprise, as an Avs fan, I thought you would have a liking to Tyson Barrie. No, not so much.
Oh, I mean, I loved him. I did not have the confidence in Cale Makar to kind of assume that offensive role when we traded him for Kadri. You know, it's like, all right, we had this kid come in, he did pretty well in the playoffs, but let Cale Makar play power play too. Like, we don't, Tyson Barrie thing works for us. Like, why are we getting rid of him?
And now we've seen the evolution and it's a whole other thing. It's like, oh, I'm glad we got rid of him. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, now we're kind of back to Kadri again. And it's like, you know, it's super awesome to see him playing as well as he is this year, but also it's a contract year. And now we absolutely can't afford to bring him back, right?
No, not a chance. He's only making 4.5.
Yeah, that's devastating. You know,
yeah.
I'll take this season for sure, but I would love to bring him back for a couple more years.
If you're Avs management, if you don't win the cup this year and you can't re-sign Kadri, do you have a little bit of regret in your mind as a team?
Yeah, I think that every year going forward, the team's depth is going to be less. We saw that this year compared to last year. You know, you see Saad leave to the Blues for money that we couldn't give him, even though we destroyed the Blues in playoffs right before that. Questionable move, maybe. you know, I think that they expected to re-sign Grubauer. You know, if you kind of look at the goalie market over the summer and the different crazy goalie moves that went down, there were good goalies available for not much. I mean, Fleury went away for nothing. And then you have the Avs like panicking and trading a first round pick and a top defensive prospect for Kemper, which is just a huge overpay compared to what the rest of the market did. So I think that they were not prepared to be in that spot and really panicked there. And now, you know, I think that contract's up this summer as well. So we have goalies to re-sign. We've got 2 more years of McKinnon after this, but that's going to be bad. So the clock's ticking for sure.
So if you have to choose between Cale Makar and Nathan McKinnon, Cale Makar. He signed for like another 8 years, isn't he?
Yeah, that deal is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I guess you might have to choose between Landeskog and McKinnon at some point.
I mean, so Landeskog just got 8 this summer, I think, right?
Oh, did he?
Yeah. If it's between the two, you take McKinnon, but
absolutely, yeah.
I don't know if there's trade protection and stuff in there, so you might be forced, but somebody else has to go instead. Hard to see not taking McKinnon unless it's a situation where he doesn't want to come back. Like if it's a Panarin kind of thing where it's like, no, like I need to go to a specific market and go play on some team. Then, you know, there's nothing you could do.
That actually did work for Panarin, oddly enough.
Yeah. I think the Avs tried to give him 12.5 million a year. And he turned it down.
Just cause he was the Russian that won New York lifestyle.
I think that like his fiance, girlfriend, something wanted to be in New York City.
There's this weird thing about Russians and going to New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like you see a lot of them, just free agents, though, like the Russians. They always seem to want to go to New York, whether Long Island, New Jersey, Rangers. They always seem to want to go to New York. It's very weird that way.
Yeah, no one ever wants to come to Colorado. It's not quite as sexy, I suppose.
Well, maybe you guys could get like Austrians and Germans. The guys are into skiing. If they're into skiing, Colorado is a good spot to go because they can ski during the season. If it's not in their contract, they can't.
Oh, yeah, it's for sure in their contract that they can't, right?
Yeah. That's a good point. Maybe skiing's not a good idea while you're playing hockey. So we'll just move on from that for a little bit anyway. The Carolina Hurricanes and Florida Panthers, they could not get more than 10,000 people in the seats, but they can't lose games either. They seem to have done really well for themselves building their teams. Are you having fun watching them as a hockey fan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Hurricanes have been really fun for a while. They did their whole bunch of jerks thing and whatever. That season was great. I don't know. Was that 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
3 or 4. And Don Cherry got fired like the following season for his "you people" comments.
But yeah, I think that, you know, they've kind of done a good job of building this kind of social media presence as this sort of underdog team that everybody can get behind. And, you know, they have a really fun Twitter account.
So much fun. And trolling Brad Marchand and the Bruins. That was awesome.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that it's fun to see kind of new teams with young players do really well. You know, it helps when you have guys like Svechnikov that are putting up these highlight reel goals. But yeah, I think, you know, the Canes are great. They're, you know, going back to the goalie thing from the offseason, made some kind of interesting moves this summer that didn't quite make sense to me.
The Hurricanes?
Yeah.
Were you talking about letting... what's his face? Mazurek?
So they traded Nedeljkovic to Detroit, and I think they got like a third round pick for that, and some backup goalie. They get Bernier? I think they got Bernier.
They might have got Bernier, yeah.
Which is funny to me because, you know, he backed up the Avs, I don't know, a decade ago, and at that point it seemed like he was in the tail end of his career, and...
I mean, and before that, he was with the Leafs as a starter, and that seemed like he was at the tail end of his career there too. He seems to have been just like getting like second chances since he was 25.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure I'm exaggerating this a little bit, but he's got to be like 40 at this point. So they essentially got a third round pick back for, you know, a goalie prospect that almost won the Calder. You know, then they went out and they got Anderson in free agency.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's too early to tell if that was a good move.
Well, I guess we'll find out if Anderson gets him through the first round of the playoffs. Because if he can't get him through the first round of the playoffs, they're in the same position as the Leafs were in for 5 years. Just a really good team in the regular season that loses in the first round.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, and then I guess the other interesting thing that the Canes did that I didn't love was, you know, they went and signed Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah, that one was questionable. His whole persona seems to be a bit rough around the edges, kind of Evander Kane-ish almost, where it seems like nobody seems to really particularly like him other than the fact that he's a good player.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it seemed like at least my piece of hockey Twitter that I'm in was pretty upset with that in the summer. And at this point, it feels like everyone's sort of just forgotten. And, you know, he's having a ridiculous season, which maybe helps, but I don't know. I guess, like, I would like to see the league and teams kind of react a little bit more strongly to situations like this and just be like, you know what, you're a good player, but, you know, these are our principles and, you know, you did this and this and we don't want you on our team and there's no space for you in the league.
So would you sit, were you, I guess, in your hockey Twitter that you're in, did they have similar heat about Evander Kane standing in Edmonton after being released from the San Jose Sharks?
Yeah, for sure. I think that a lot of people are pretty upset. I think that I've seen a lot of Edmonton fans that are upset. Like, you know, I don't want this guy on my team.
Yeah. Do you think the players should have more concern about things like this, where they be more concerned about what they're doing what their teammates are doing outside of the rink? So like you have Evander Kane with the domestic violence allegations, gambling allegations, throwing game allegations, fake vaccine card confirmed allegations, and you know those type of things. And then you have a player like D'Angelo who has some pretty out there political views and you know just general assholery, I guess. Do you think players should take more of a concern of that and be more public about it? Or
yeah, I would really like to see players take more of a stand. I think with D'Angelo, some of the stuff was like racist comments toward teammates. I think, you know, maybe that's a one-off thing, and he messed up, he crossed the line, and like, you know, is truly sorry for that. But if that's part of his character and like who he is, like you don't want that in your locker room. And like, I don't know, like how do we preach this like hockey diversity stuff and hockey is for everyone when like this kind of thing is going on? You know, it feels like a similar culture to the horrible things that happened in the Blackhawks organization a decade ago. You can see that they're still, with their owner and whatever last week, the press conference,
that was disturbing at how tone deaf that response was.
And then you see that though, and you immediately say, oh, it all makes sense why this is still happening and why this is a problem, because like from the top down, this is what the culture is, and you know somebody has to do something about it. I don't know. It's to me, it seems like the players are the ones that kind of have the most power and ability to make that change. There's only 32 owners, and we've got hundreds of players, and the turnover of the players is way more frequent. So like, yeah, let's have some of these new guys that are, younger, maybe raised a little bit differently, a little bit more open-minded, to push some of this change across the league.
I think they are trying, but I think the problem is the biggest stars are the ones that don't want to talk. It's, you're not getting the Connor McDavid's, the Nathan McKinnon's, the Sidney Crosby, Alexander Ovechkin's stepping up and talking about it. You're getting Ryan Reeves, and a bunch of other guys who aren't necessarily the biggest names. You got PK Subban, who I guess is a big name, but at this point, like, his career is essentially over. He's like not really worth his money anymore. So nobody's really paying attention to PK Subban. So I think the problem is that the wrong player is talking. The players are talking, but it's not the right players. Therefore, it's not getting out there the way it should be.
Yeah, that's for sure right. I think Connor McDavid was asked about the Evander Kane thing, and he kind of gave this non-answer of like, oh, I don't really know and whatever, and you know, we're just going to play hockey kind of thing. That's exactly what you don't want to hear.
Yeah, he essentially dismissed the whole topic in itself. He's like, oh, well, it's not my problem. It's not my life, you know. I just have to play hockey with him. If he can score goals when I pass in the puck, I'm good with it, because I'm just here to win games.
And that's just kind of a bummer.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Oh, so the Ironman streak of Keith Yandle, who now is the record holder Ironman streak at like 900 and probably 48 games at this point, because I think it was about a week and a half ago when he broke it. Thoughts on Keith Yandle's Ironman streak, and then thoughts on Phil Kessel, who's right behind him, but probably will never catch him because he's only 1 year younger than him.
Yeah, there was actually a tiny bit of research that I meant to do about this, and I forgot. Do you know if, you know, the streak was given like a pass for COVID protocol stuff, or have both of those guys also not gone into COVID protocol the entire time?
They've also both managed to not go into COVID protocol and just never miss a game.
That to me is the most impressive piece. You know, it feels like just about everybody in the league has tested positive for COVID at some point, whether or not, false positive or asymptomatic. And to have these guys with so much on the line in terms of just this crazy stat with these streaks, not test positive is just amazing. I don't have a whole lot to say except that that's awesome. And I wish that I had players on my team that were really good and also never missed a game.
It's funny though, because both the players are kind of known to be kind of aloof on the ice a lot of the time, where they're just kind of like doopy doopy doo. I'm just playing some hockey. It's like, oh, there goes the puck to the other end. Oh, they scored. Oh well, better next time. All right, moving on. You know, so it's kind of like weird. It's like seems like the less intense you are, the longer you can play without getting hurt.
There's the Phil Kessel stuff with the hot dogs, right? And yeah. So you know, you kind of think of him as. I mean, he's certainly not fat, and he's probably a much better athlete than I am. He's definitely a much better athlete than I am.
Yeah.
But, like, you kind of have these memes of just, like, oh, like, I don't really care. Like, I just eat hot dogs and whatever. And then you contrast that with somebody like Nathan MacKinnon, who is, you know, making sure everything he puts in his body is just perfect. And then it's like, all right, and he's the one that's getting hurt all the time. Life's just not fair.
Yeah. Well, I actually seen, I think they're interviewing Rick Tocchet, who coached Phil Kessel in Phoenix. And he was saying, like, Phil Kessel hates talking hockey. Like, when he's not playing hockey, the last thing he wants to talk about is hockey. So, like, if you're a coach, you basically have to goad him into a hockey conversation with something else first. Otherwise, he has no interest in listening to you. So it's like, hey, Phil. What'd you think about the golf on the weekend? And then you can tie that into hockey somehow. But if you don't do that, he doesn't give a shit. And he also has like this major Coca-Cola addiction. Like he's got to have his Coca-Cola during intermission. So like all the trainers and medical people are trying to get him to like lose like 5 pounds. So like you got to cut out the Coke. He didn't score for 3 games. He went right to the vending machine, bought himself a Coke. And they're like, what about your diet? He's like, oh, fuck that. Drank it. When I scored 2 goals, they're like, well, there goes that.
That's a new story for me. I've not heard that. That's amazing. Yeah.
I guess Kessel's just a weird dude, but he sounds like he's a really good guy. Yeah. Just weird.
That's the kind of stuff that makes sports fun. Just kind of these like weird inside story quirks about the different players and, you know, whatever works, works.
So we talked about Brad Marchand and shenanigans last night. I guess we could dive more into that. Beyond Brad Marchand, is there any other players in the league you hate right now?
I think one of the players that I dislike the most is probably Ryan Reeves. You brought him up earlier for the work that he's doing in Hockey Diversity Alliance stuff, so... what's obviously great and I'm happy about that stuff. But as a player, I do not like him at all. I think he kind of represents everything about kind of the old style of the game that I would like to see go away.
Yeah. He's one of those last stragglers of the Enforcer Club.
And, very disappointing to see him kind of sign this 2-year deal, in New York over the summer. They're just like, I don't think that he's worth it. I don't think that he is actually good at hockey. He's just, you know, this goon that skates around and beats people up. I guess I don't enjoy that part of the game anymore.
I think unlike probably a lot of the goons from the 90s, I think Ryan Reeves is actually a pretty good skater. It's just everything else about after skating that he's not that great at. And I totally agree with you that he's like the last straggler of the enforcers that really doesn't have a place in the league. And I feel he's really only there is because he's a fun character to tote out to the media sometimes.
Yeah, it's especially frustrating listening to like a national broadcast, a playoff national broadcast in particular, when he's on the other team. He just takes up way too much of their thought process and the conversation. You know, the broadcasters want to talk about Ryan Reeves and how, oh, like, you know, he just laid some hit and that's totally changing the momentum of this game. And it's like, I don't know. I don't think that's nearly as significant as you think it is.
It isn't, but Ryan Reeves enjoys talking to them and he's always quotable. So the media are always happy to talk about Ryan Reeves because they know that as long as they kiss his ass, that he's going to give him a quote after the game and that's what they need for their work.
Yeah, but at least, you know, now he's way out in the East. We'll maybe see him in the Stanley Cup Finals. But yeah, I don't know. So Ryan Reeves, I guess, is my answer.
Just because I am a Leafs fan, I'm going to have to go with Brad Marchand. That guy just always seems to screw me over somehow, some way. and he takes so many pokes on social media, and it's just I laugh at them because they're funny and like they're fact based, but at the same time I'm like, oh, this guy. And he does like stuff like last night to Jari. Like, what the hell was up with that? Do you have any idea what led to that? Like, he's knocking the puck out, stealing the puck, and then whipping it at the guy that's like cleaning up the ice, which is very awkward and kind of seemed a little bit rude to the rink staff. And then punching Jari in the face and then giving him a little love tap with a stick. Like, I don't know what Jari said to him, but he obviously got under Marchand's skin because he seemed very mad last
night. Yeah, I only saw the clips on social media, so I don't have more context from anything that happened earlier in the game. But yeah, other than it sort of feeling like classic Marchand stuff, yeah, that's, you know, kind of just the player that he is sometimes. You know, he might be what, like biting your ear, whatever weird thing he did a couple years ago, or maybe he's doing what he did yesterday.
Yeah, I think it was licking, not biting.
Maybe.
I think. Did he bite? Did he have a biting incident too? I know Brendan Lemieux did. Well, I guess that's something we could bring up too. What do you think of Brendan Lemieux biting, and then that coming after his father actually had a biting incident as well back in 87?
Oh, yeah, I had forgotten about that until you just said that.
I did too, actually.
I mean, I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
That's kind of where I was going with it. Yeah, it was just interesting to see that, like, you know, dad was such a dirty player and all of a sudden his son's doing this exact same thing. And it's like, why are I not surprised? Yeah. Oh, so now that TNT and ESPN have the American rights to the NHL, and TNT's having some fun with it, bringing in the boys and spinning Chicklets sometimes, having Wayne Gretzky in there. Whose broadcast as a hockey fan do you enjoy better? Do you enjoy watching the ESPN broadcast or TNT's version?
Yeah, I think it's still a little bit too early for me to tell. You know, I've probably only watched 4 or 5 games on each.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, super awesome to see the people that TNT is bringing in. As far as, like, you know, having Gretzky in the booth, that's amazing for the game, right? That's something where if someone's flipping channels or whatever, you know, you might not be a big hockey fan, but there are probably a lot of people that are going to recognize him and maybe pause, see what he has to say. And then it's also really cool to just get his takes on, you know, earlier we talked about how he compared Cale Makar to Paul Coffey, just things like that. And, you know, I'm really pulling for Ovechkin to beat the record. And I think that it's super fun when you have the current record holder get to commentate on the record being broken. So hopefully he's still around when Ovi makes it. I think, you know, very excited to see what he has to say as it gets closer and closer there. I think, you know, since ESPN is doing hockey, I've seen a lot more ESPN hockey stuff on social media. I think that's probably one of the biggest noticeable differences from last year, and that's just really exciting to see. And I assume with that comes like SportsCenter featuring hockey more, some SC Top 10 stuff featuring hockey more. You know, I don't have cable anymore, so I don't really watch SportsCenter these days, but I assume some people still do, and hopefully they're seeing a lot more hockey.
So you just stream your games as well? Yeah, it's much cheaper that way. The cable package is just ridiculous. Yeah,
and then I guess with all of this, we have ESPN Plus with all the hockey games instead of NHL TV. I think a lot of people didn't like that. I will say that I like the experience of NHL TV a little bit more, but ESPN Plus is way cheaper, and now I get all the rest of the ESPN Plus content. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's it's going to be a long-term win. There might be some software bugs and whatever that they have to work out, but I think they'll work it out. And now I get to watch way more sports than I could before.
Yeah. I guess for me, I'm enjoying the TNT broadcast more, just in that I actually want to tune in to the intermissions because the intermissions are actually interesting. Whereas the ESPN broadcast, I pretty much zone out for the intermissions. Like, let me know when the game's back on. I don't care. With the TNT broadcast, I find like there's more banter and just kind of like fun stuff going on, to where it's like, oh, I actually want to see what's going on during the intermission, whereas ESPN I don't. But I guess that has nothing to do with the hockey broadcast. It's just like a personal preference, I guess, where for entertainment value, I find TNT's broadcast when they're actually not, when the game's not on, to be better from my perspective.
I don't know if they're still doing it, but I think early in the season, ESPN was doing this weird kind of thing in the middle of the broadcast where the commentators would just stop talking for like 5 minutes of the game. Did you ever get to see this?
I haven't seen it, no, but yeah, that is kind of weird and a little interesting way to go about it. And I feel like you're kind of just leaving some people in the dark for 5 minutes.
It was this weird thing where it's like 5 minutes and it's ad free. So if there are stoppages, they still just show the camera on, you know, the guys skating to the bench or whatever. And they don't say anything. And I think maybe they were playing around with different camera angles. And it's kind of a nice idea, because sometimes you're like, man, would you just kind of shut up, like, so we could watch the game, especially when they start talking about other random stuff. But it was just awkward.
Yeah, yeah. I think if they had done that where it's like, now, you know, the rink atmosphere segment or whatever, where it's like, we're just going to, like, let the rink audio play along. And then it's like, at least you kind of know what you're experiencing, where it's like, oh, where they're trying to give us a feel of what it's like to be in the arena where the commentators aren't talking over it. But like, just to like randomly stop talking for 5 minutes, it just feels like a technical issue. It's like, what happened to the audio? Like, this, the truck guy screwed it up again. Shame on that guy. He had one job and he screwed it up. So I got one more thing on the notes, and it's probably going to be the most contentious thing, because it is Olympics, and if you guys didn't know, I am Canadian, Andrew is American, and the Canadian women played the American women the other night, and it was a good game, but it didn't go Andrew's way. The Canadian women came out with a 4-2 win, and the Canadian goalie had 51 saves, so it's not like the American women played badly at all.
Yeah, I was feeling really good the first two periods of that game. First period especially, the U.S. were just crushing it. It felt like Canada was pinned in their end just about the entire period. You know, they just couldn't solve the goalie. But, I mean, I think that that's kind of all you could hope for. You know, they had an amazing first period, and you think, okay, we're just going to go into the second, carry this momentum, have a great game. You know, they were scoring some goals. And yeah, unfortunately, you know, a couple.
I think that game could have gone either way for the most part. Like, the Americans could have won that game 6-5, really, if you look at it. But then it went losing 4-2 because the Canadian goalie had like the game of her life and made 51 stops. And it's not like they were a bunch of little lob shots from the blue line either. There's some grade A chances in there. The American women, yeah, they dominated, exactly, as you said, they dominated the first two periods, and they got unlucky with a few goals as far as Canada is concerned. The Philly Poulin goal was really nice, but other than that, it was just, like, hard worker goals.
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple of bad bounces. I think the U.S. hit the post maybe twice in that game as well. I think I'm nothing but excited for this gold medal game. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself. But
I think it's safe to get ahead of yourself.
Everyone thinks this is happening, and I think everyone wants it to happen. You know, it's going to be a letdown if a different team is in the gold medal game.
I just don't know why, as a hockey fan, you would want to see anything but the best two teams in the gold medal game. Is it kind of a little bit old, because you get to see it like every year? Because every year at the World Championships, is Canada USA in the gold medal game again? Oh, is Canada USA in the gold medal game? Oh, what happened in 96? It was Canada, USA in the gold medal game. And it's like, okay, well, it's 2022, and for the last like 30 years, it's been the same two teams in the gold medal game. We want to see a different matchup, but I just don't think you're going to see it for a long time, because like, Finland's starting to get better with women's hockey, but other than that, it's just, there isn't the skill level yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, you get to see the other matchups in the rest of the tournament. You want the gold medal game to be a close, fun, extremely competitive game.
And they always tend to be when it's Canada, USA on the women's side. Well, I guess on the men's side, it can be a little bit varied. There's no guarantee Canada or the USA will even get a medal.
Yeah. I'm still very bummed about men's hockey in the Olympics this year.
Yeah. I know Canada played this morning, but honestly, I didn't wake up at 7 in the morning to watch it. Because I think they're playing like China or something. And yeah, I've really not that much interest in watching it. I mean, is it kind of cool to see Eric Staal over there? Yeah, but I mean, I spent a lot of time watching Eric Staal over his career. I don't think I need to watch him as an old man playing at the Olympics.
I haven't even gone and looked at the rosters yet after the NHL players weren't going.
Yeah, it's honest. It's pretty disappointing. Chris Chelios' kid is playing for China. Okay. So he's not even playing for the American. He didn't make the American team, even though his dad's Chris freaking Chelios. So he's playing for China. Other than that, I don't know too many players on the American team. Similar to yourself, the NHL wasn't going. Just like last time, I just really don't care that much. It's like I'd rather watch NHL hockey than watch Olympic hockey because it's better hockey.
Yeah. I think that in some ways it's good. It gives me more time to give my attention to the women's game. It's very similar thing with the Summer Olympics and soccer for me. They have whatever the weird rule for men's soccer in the Olympics is where you have to be under a certain age or something, except you get like...
It's 25 and under or something, I think, but you get a couple overages.
Even the overage players, it's not like they're the best. It's not like, oh, you have Messi and Ronaldo as the overage players. It's like some super overaged, washed up kind of guy. And
it's the guy that everybody remembers from 15 years ago when he was good. It's like, hey, he's back. It's like, oh, he's old now. He's not very good.
Yeah, like I remember Germany with, I think, Lukas Podolski. Maybe it was 2 Olympics ago at this point, and I was like, wait, that guy is still playing soccer? But yeah, it's like, you know, you kind of look at it and you're like, okay, the men's side isn't that interesting. So the women's side, though, this is great. Amazing women's soccer to be watched in the Olympics. And so I think exact same thing for women's hockey this winter. And if this is how it goes and we just watch women's hockey instead of men's hockey in the Olympics, I'm here for it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's not like the hockey's bad or anything. It's like everybody always criticizes the women's hockey. Oh, it's slower. There's no hitting. It's like, well, there isn't that much hitting at the NHL anymore. And when we do see a hit, someone's got to have to fight for it every time.
Yeah. You know? And
even if it's a clean hit, they got to fight for it.
And international men's hockey is always like a little bit less physical as well. They've got their extra rules and whatever. Bigger ice. I think getting to showcase the women's game a little bit more, that's huge for them, huge for trying to grow that market, and hopefully they can kind of take advantage of not having the NHLers around.
Yeah for sure. I'm looking forward to it for sure. Do we have anything else we want to get into?
Yeah, I guess one question, some people are talking about, should women's hockey still be in the Olympics, right? Like, we have this USA-Canada matchup every year, every Olympics, whatever. No other countries really seem to be that competitive. Does it belong in the Olympics?
I think so. Honestly, I think so. I mean, maybe we're both biased to the fact that we're both part of countries that are in the gold medal game. And maybe if we were living in Russia and like the women never do anything at the Olympics, maybe we'd be like, well, why do we even have a team? Why are we funding this to get no success of it? So I guess for me, I believe it has a spot there. I enjoy watching it. As of right now, we don't get a whole lot of coverage of women's hockey outside of the Olympics or World Championships. So like, I only get to watch them like maybe once, twice a year. And I enjoy watching it, even if it is a 9-1 rout of Switzerland. I mean, usually Switzerland's goalie is really good. Like, the women's goalies in the other countries are usually pretty good. Like, it's not uncommon to see, like, the American women beat the Czech Republic 12-1. And then you look, the Czech Republic goalie is up 68 pucks. It's like, holy, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, there's still good stories on other teams, regardless of what the score was.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, all of these players and teams are still choosing to go to the Olympics, right? No one's being forced into this. I mean, obviously, we should just ask them directly, like, you know, do you want to participate in the Olympics? But I think the answer for all of these countries would be absolutely. You know, in other sports, you hear kind of the storylines of, you know, the random skier who has like some dual citizenship or whatever from some other country and jumps through all these hoops to get to like do half pipe in the Olympics. And
yeah,
you know, they're not good and they know they're not going to win, but they get to go to the Olympics.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter if you finished last place or not. You were an athlete at the Olympics. That's a nice little badge of honor.
Yeah,
would be for me.
You know, I think that for these countries that are still developing their programs, you know, they need to play at the kind of highest level they can. You're trying to get better. You're trying to grow your team, grow the program, grow the fan base. You know, I think you put the spotlight on, get everyone watching, and eventually there's no reason that these men's hockey powerhouse countries can't have good women's hockey teams.
I think we absolutely
just
not.
Need to give them the chance, and need to have some more popularity and funding and everything behind it, and pulling them out of the Olympics would just be a huge step in the wrong direction.
Okay, so that being said, we both agree that they should be at the Olympics. Would you like to see women's professional hockey on TV?
Yeah.
Because right now, like, women's professional hockey doesn't get any television time. Like, they probably could. I would watch it. But so you would agree that they should be airing some anyway?
Yeah, I think that, you know, whether it's on ESPN or on some other network, on just live streamed on YouTube, on Twitch, I think that there are so many different creative ways that we have now to kind of put this content out there, that if there are games that are not easily available for people that really want to watch them, that's the biggest problem. And then from there, we can figure out, okay, how do you start to put this in front of more people?
Yeah. I know for even in Canada and like our national broadcasts are all about promoting the women's game and growing the game for women, but at the same time, those same media companies are not putting women's hockey on their network outside of the Olympics or World Championships. So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. It seems like, you know, they talk a big game about it, but at the same time, it's not like they're helping to get it out there either. So I'd like to see it. I'm not sure if I ever will, but hopefully.
Yeah, you know, I think that we're getting better. We've had different women competing in the All-Star game now for 4 or 5 years. We have some of these same women that are in some of the national broadcasts. I know that the NBC crew had a couple, I think US Olympians, that would come in for playoff games and stuff. I think all of that is going to help. But yeah, we just need kind of an easier way for the fans to watch. And then I think they will. I think that, the Olympic hockey shows that people really like this. And, you know, Twitter was blowing up about this game, and how, you know, the U.S. just could not score goals on the Canadian goalie.
She played the game of her life. I don't think she's had that good of a game before.
You know, we're crossing her fingers that there's no way she could do it 2 games in a row, right?
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers that she can, obviously, but that's just the general bias that we come to in this. I think it's good, though. I think it's good to be able to have a little bit of competition every now and then among people that like each other anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you have any other questions or notes?
I think that's it on my stuff.
Thank you to Andrew for joining me here today on Tentacles from the Deep, a Seattle Kraken podcast. If you want to check out his website, audiograph.io, if you're a content creator, it's super helpful and 100% free. And you should probably do that because, Andrew's awesome and you just heard him for an hour and it's kind of worthwhile. And if you want to find the podcast on Twitter, you can do that at Kraken Fancast, where I'm live tweeting all the games. for good or worse, better or worse. It's because of Seattle Kraken, of course, we know it's probably a little bit worse most of the time. And I guess that is about it. Keep cracking out there. And once again, thanks, Andrew, for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.